And welcome to our AA meeting for Planet FM 104.6. My name is Sally, I'm an alcoholic and I will be chairing this morning's meeting. Would you like to help me open with the serenity prayer? God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Thank you for joining us this morning. Today our speakers are Brian, Patsy and T, who will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. And this morning we're going to get Brian to kick us off.
Thanks, Patsy. Sorry, Sally. My name's Brian. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's the 4th of March 1992. I got sober in Australia in a little place called Childers. My home group is on a Monday night at Epsom Lodge in Auckland, 31 Margaret Street, I think it is. What it was like, what happened and what it's like now, what it was like. Sometimes I don't really know. What I believed it was like, I thought it was good to start off with, which possibly was in my younger years, and as I didn't know anything about alcoholism as such, and as it progressed within me, my drinking got more and more, and my behaviour got worse and worse, and my attitude got really bad. I'm sure all of us know how to drink, but I didn't know how to stop. Didn't know how to stay stopped, let's put it that way. And it took a lot of things to happen before I actually came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people don't have to go through a lot of pain. I didn't wake up one morning and think, what a great idea, I might go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Basically what got through me through the door was the fact that my marriage had fallen apart. And I didn't know that, I didn't have any answers. And I sought help, and as a male, that's quite hard to seek help, because for some reason, I have to think that I have to do it all myself. But due to a set of circumstances and people that were put in my path, I was led through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful for that. I was asked at one stage, did I want to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? My thinking is always, you know, the opposite. It's like, no way. But thank God that I said yes. And I went along and I met people very much like I met in the rooms today, you know, men and women who's just shared their experience, strength and hope with me. And I came away from that first meeting with a bit of hope that maybe, just maybe, this program might work for me. And I kept coming back. I got a sponsor to start with, and we went through the steps as in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that held me in good stead for right up until this point in time, really. He shared with me his experience, and I thought that was quite unreal, really, because no one's ever been open and honest enough to share their life with me, as I've never been open enough and honest enough to share my life with another person, knowing all my secrets and my quirks and everything else. But he said that I could leave those rooms and never need drink again, and they've held true. I was also told that if I didn't want it, that they would refund my misery in full, and I didn't want that either. So I progressed, I carried on with what was suggested. But what happened is my sponsor at one stage, he picked up a drink, and I always thought that once you got sober, that was it. But I've been made to believe that this disease, apart from being cunning, baffling and powerful, is very patient. And so I went sponsorless for a while. And during those years of sponsorless, being sponsorless, I made some decisions that led me to the part where, you know, I heard other people, because I was the only one answering to myself. These days I have a sponsor, thank God, and I run things past him, because I don't want to go back to where I was. And I'm left with my thinking otherwise, and they say that stinking thinking leads to drinking. On the opposite side of that is like, once I'm in recovery and I'm doing what's suggested and I'm around people that are in recovery, my life changes dramatically, and my thinking changes as well. You know, they talk about God as good orderly direction. Prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was no God, or if there was, it was the punishing God that I grew up with. Today, I like that in tradition too, about the loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. But I find that the God of my understanding today is in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous through you people, you know. God with skin on, I like to call it. And I'm guided, I'm loved, I suppose I'm not judged, you know. That's why it's good to have the traditions and the concepts, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous isn't just made up of the recovery of the steps. There's three sides to that triangle. And like today, to be able to be of service and share my story with you today. I know that this is a better life. I don't have any problems with not drinking. What my problem today is like with living, really, on an everyday basis. You know, I wake up, I shower, I brush my teeth, I make my lunch, you know, and I go to work. And that's something that didn't happen when I was drinking. It was I'd be getting my wife or someone to make excuses why I couldn't go to work, you know. I was very irresponsible. Today I like to think that I'm a bit more responsible and able to be of service to my community, the fellowship, my employers, that when I go to work, they're pleased to have me there. And that's, you know, part of the promises, I suppose, you know, that our lives change, that we're not the people that we once were. I'm sort of running out of what to say, really. Sorry, Sally.
Thank you, Brian. It's so good to have you share with us this morning, and we really appreciate it. I'm going to now invite Patsy to share with us.
Thanks, Sally. I'm Patsy and I'm an alcoholic. My anniversary date, 6th of August 1983, which is a long time when you think about it as four decades, but it's still very much to me one day at a time. When I came into this fellowship, I was a nearly a middle-aged white professional person who didn't think for a moment that alcoholics were like me. I thought they were men in great coats with a little brown paper bag, you know, hiding under a bridge. But one of the interesting things was that I used to go to get my drink at different places so they didn't think I was there too often. And frequently the places that I came out of, I had my bottle in a brown paper bag. So what difference is that? You know, I now know that everybody looks the same face down in their own individual gutter. And my individual gutter was my home. I didn't drink outside. I didn't dance on tables. I didn't do any of those extroverted things that I thought drink might do for me. I sat alone in my apartment drinking in solitude and thinking I was having a great party of one. And drinking, to begin with, as Brian said, was you know, quite nice. But unfortunately, somebody of my ilk, I was not able to stop at one. I had to have more. And once you've passed that fine line where everything feels wonderful, you have another one to try and maintain that wonderful feeling that you had. And it never works. Never works. So frequently when I drank in the evenings, and I never drank before 5 o'clock, but boy did I hoe into it at 5 o'clock. And when I drank and I would cook a meal, it would go in the warming drawer. So I'm an expert on burnt peas and dried meat, because by the time I got to eat it, it was quite late in the evening. And I didn't want to eat it because I wanted to have another drink, pure and simple. You know, it's an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind. And I learnt when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and this was through a friend at work, who happened to say to me one day that she went to AA, and I said, oh, yes, good for you. Thought no more about it. And then the last day of my drinking, I was on the phone to her on the floor in my apartment, sobbing my eyes out for about 2.5 hours, telling her that I was going to get a cup of coffee. She knew very well that I wasn't going to get a cup of coffee, that I was going to fill up my glass. And I did this thing about 3 or 4 times. But since that day, thank goodness, I've not had the need to pick up another drink. And I learnt that it wasn't just a question of putting down the drink. It was a question of changing myself, changing my attitudes. AA can stand for altered attitudes too. And I found myself realising why I drank. I drank because I was happy, sad, mad, glad, all those things, because I wanted to be different. I wanted to change, and it never changed me. It made me worse. So I had to learn that when sad things happened, I had to learn not to pick up the drink, but to use the tools of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'd been given in order to fix those things. Now, you know, all this time later, I know how to live life better. But that's not to say that these things don't still come up. And that's why I still keep coming back to AA, because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow that is going to swing me into a mad state. And I don't want to be back where I was. I can't think of anything worse. So I still try to do the things that are suggested of me one day at a time. Don't always do that well, but I try. You know, I'm grateful, so I make a gratitude list of the things. You know, I used to worry and be upset because I didn't have this type of car, or didn't have the jewels that person had or the life they had. Now I'm so grateful to have a roof over my head, food on the table, and most important of all for me is friends. Friends who understand me. And one of the greatest things that I've been given in this fellowship is the gift of laughter. And I had laughter when I was drinking, but I used to laugh at people. It was not a good thing. And now I'm sober, I laugh with people. And what's more, I laugh at myself. Some of the things I look back on and think, wow, you thought that way. I think, how mad is that? How stupid was that? I come from England where I think we're pretty good at laughing at ourselves. I had lost the art. I went to somewhere not long ago and I celebrated my AA birthday. And after the meeting, there were about 10 of us sitting around the table laughing our heads off, feeling so comfortable with each other. And anybody listening or looking at us would probably have thought that we could have had a few drinks between us at least. And it wasn't. It was such a joyful occasion. And I never had that actual feeling of joy in my sobriety. So I've been gifted this return of joy in my life, and I'm so, so grateful for that. And it's, you know, in this room today, I know 2 of the people, and one has been a stranger, but as they say, there are no such people as strangers, only friends you have yet to meet. And that's what happens in this fellowship. So thank you for asking me to share, Sally.
Thank you so much, Patsy, and congratulations on such an amazing milestone. I would now like to invite T to share with us, please.
Hi, kia ora, I'm T. I'm an alcoholic and I'm an addict. In fact, I'm just addicted to anything that will change my mood and change how I feel. And that was the appeal of alcohol. It took me out of myself. And, you know, they have a saying, the man takes the drink, then the drink takes the drink, then the drink takes the man. And I just went from chapter one to chapter three immediately. There was no sort of in between. And I heard another one, which I really liked also, you know, it started as a one night stand, turned to friends with benefits, then just became a committed dysfunctional relationship. And I just started as a committed dysfunctional relationship. And I never had control. You know, I would drink or use more than intended on a regular basis. I would drink knowing that there was no guarantee that I was going to act well in that space, that I might hurt people, but I'd continue to drink always. I never thought about trying to control it or stop it. That sort of never sort of entered the picture back then, because I was young when I came into these rooms, and I had a really powerful experience that got me here. You know, I could say I've often wondered sort of over the years, what was it that got me into these rooms? And I had a couple of powerful experiences, but one of them was my mother doing a step one. I was living at home, my behaviour was unmanageable, and she did a step one on me. She was sort of going, while my son is living under this house, my life is unmanageable. And she asked me to leave. She asked me to... She said, I realise there's nothing I can do with you. So she recognised she is powerless. But you have to leave. You can't live here and behave as you're behaving. And if that means that I get a phone call saying that you're dead, that's how it has to be. But you can't live here. And that's a really courageous thing for a mother to do, to let go of her son, because she recognised there was nothing she could do for me. And, you know, a month later I had a really powerful experience sitting one morning in the sun, having a cigarette, having a drink, coughing up blood, and this woman comes out and she could see that I was a train wreck, and she had a friend who was in recovery, and she talked to this person. And then they came out and she asked me, would it be okay? She told me about this person who had been sort of 8 years sober, and that this person had given an invitation. This person had done a step 12 and had given an invitation that if I ever wanted to talk about what was happening with me, that she would be available. And this was somebody I'd never met, but in that moment, all my desire to drink stopped, and I just knew that I needed to go and see this woman. And today I'm so grateful that I never had the battle of ambivalence, of swinging, oh, am I an alcoholic, am I not? I just knew. And in one sense, I started to get really excited, because I knew going to see this person was going to change my life. And sure enough, a few weeks later, I was in detox. You know, I love detox because I had a pair of pyjamas, I had three meals on the day, nothing that was ever... And I could have a shower, you know. I didn't look after myself at all when I was drinking and using. That just didn't enter the picture. So, you know, I went to treatment and got introduced to the 12 steps and introduced to the idea that there's something bigger than me that looks after me, that speaks through people and has spoken through people in the rooms many times, and not just in the rooms, you know, outside the rooms. And as one of the previous speakers was sharing, you know, sort of God and skin, you know, is what people in the fellowship have been. And I hear, when I go to meetings, I hear people's stories, I hear people, how they do, how they stay sober, how they live life on life's terms, how they hand their desire to control their life over to a power they may not understand, but they can see the evidence of it working. They have peace of mind. They have a sense of purpose. They have joy and laughter. They have that darkness of having one foot in the hole of depression isn't there. You know, they've got 2 feet in life, and a large chunk of that comes with being involved in the fellowship. And, you know, and I've walked away from these rooms. I walked away after 4.5 years of something that was so important to me. And to this day, I can't tell you why I never got connected. I just moved towns. I started study and never got connected to the fellowship, to the love, to the reminder that me and anything that changes the way I feel, any chemical, don't mix, and I will lose myself. I'll lose those relationships really quickly, and that's exactly what happened. So 4.5 years after moving to Auckland from where I was living in Gisborne, not being to a meeting, not getting that reminder, I picked up again. And there was, you know, I was so excited to pick up again. So I really got there, understood how they talk about sort of, you know, this disease is sort of patient and just waits and does press-ups. And when the time's right, and I was, you know, I was with a friend who I'd never drank with, never used with. And we were on a sort of a journey travelling across the desert, and that thought entered my head. Oh, man, I've never got stoned with you, Mike. I've never got drunk with you. I wonder what... let's do it. Once we get to this big party that we're going to, I was going to pick up. There was no thought of where did that last drink take me. That just didn't... And the fact that I had about 4 months to live, 8 and a half years previous, never entered my mind. So it took a long time too to sort of come back into these rooms. But, you know, that reminder, the love that you feel in these rooms, the, you know, if this is the group of drunks and there's good orderly direction in these rooms, then, you know, there's a I hear that saying, I think Khalil Gibran says it, you know, if say not God is in your heart, rather you sit in the heart of God. And that's sort of what meetings are like. And is that I hear from the group of drunks that I sit amongst who understand each other, who have loved each other back to health, I hear this good orderly direction. I hear the little pieces of wisdom that can change how I think, that can give me that sense of that things aren't as bad as maybe what I think they are. That might, you know, it's really helpful too. Like Brian was saying, you know, having a sponsor, having somebody else who's outside my head to talk to. You know, wisdom's in the multitude of counsel, and I can't be left alone. So I need other people to bounce things off, and I'm very grateful to that sponsor, because he's more than a sponsor. You know, over the years, he's a really good friend. I'm the godfather to his children. He trusts me, you know, and we trust each other. And, you know, those would never have happened, because relationships were never as going to be important as alcohol or whatever it was that could change my way of feeling about myself. And today I take great pride in knowing I don't need any drink, I don't need any chemical to feel good. And that feels really good. And I love that idea. And if I'm feeling sort of down, those sorts of things that I think about the people I have in my life, the fact that I do live life's terms, that I can generate my own happiness and laughter, that I'm connected to people, makes such a, put me on a good feeling vibration. And when I'm in that vibration, I know I'm connected to a God of my not understanding, but I feel connected. And my compass for that is to feel happy, to feel joy, to feel peace. Those feelings of being, my feelings of being in alignment with that God of my own understanding or not understanding that I feel connected to, that is connected to everyone that I know in my life, whether they're in these rooms or not. You know, I feel like that God spark in me talks to the God spark in you. And that's been that knowledge, as my mother would say, all has, is, and will be well. I get a great feeling of peace when I think about those things. And You know, the idea of gratitude is rather than wanting what you have, rather than having what you want, wanting what you have. And today I want what I have. Oh, I like that. And when I want what I have, the rest of it takes care of itself and I get to have what I want. So I'll leave it there. Cheers.
Thank you, T. Really appreciate you sharing with us this morning as well. Well, that brings our meeting to a close. And a big thank you to Brian, Patsy and T. Amazing sharing this morning. We are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. so tune in to Planet 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 229 6757 or go to the AA website, which is aa.org.nz. There is a whole raft of information on the website, and also you will be able to find a list of meetings to attend in your local area. I'd now like to close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I'll be crying while the TV's loud. I will sell all the clothes that you took off my body, but right now they're in a bag in my house. I can't get rid of you as much as I try to. You're like this growing, never dreading doubt. Maybe in the morning I'll be better. Once I sweat you out like it was just a fever. But you intoxicate. Whatever. I won't take too much, just a momentary touch as we pass each other on the street. You will whisper to your friends not to come here again, cause I make it so awkward when we meet. I'll keep trying my best not to draw your attention, but I like it when you're looking at me. I'm obsessive and still a bit possessive over all the parts of your body. And your new girl will say that you didn't have to save her, but I never asked you to. So you are still the baggage that I carry you around. So you wear me down as I ask myself, where are you now? When I'm lying under my rebound, I still hear the sound.